Alex. It's a pleasure once again. Welcome back.
It's so much fun talking to you.
I
swear to God, I feel like we have known each other for a very long time because we have so many like-minded ideas.
I mean, it's really quite amazing. Yeah. And what's even more amazing is that we're about halfway done already.
It goes fast.
And I've been looking forward to this for such a long time, and I'm going to go through a real withdrawal, I think, when this is over in a little while. But let's go now to another side of your work. Alex, you have been active in a number of various organizations. I would like to talk a bit about a recently formed one of these, New Music USA, which was the result of a major merger between the American Music Center and Meet the Composer. Now, my guest, Alex Shapiro, is the chair of the Media Council for New Music USA. For the uninitiated, I guess, and before we get into a little bit more about what you're going to be doing, share with our audience a bit about the American Music Center and Meet the Composer.
Well, these are two very long-standing, historic, especially in the case of American Music Center, organizations. They are advocacy organizations for composers, working musicians, and audiences. And the whole point, and they did it in different ways, is to connect the music makers with the music lovers. And it became obvious over time, and again, as society has changed, as the way we do things have changed, it became obvious that merging the two of them would be a very good idea. Mm-hmm. And that merger just happened about 3 months ago. It's very recent.
Yeah, I think in November.
And I'm going to read you, because it's very short, I'll read the listeners, the mission statement for New Music USA, which is quite wonderful. To increase opportunities for composers, performers, and audiences by fostering the creation, dissemination, and enjoyment of American new music, both nationally and internationally. New Music USA places special emphasis on broadening the public community for the music and musicians we serve. And I think community is a very, very important word here. We're going to have a working board, and then that board also has two support units, basically, councils. One is the Artist Council, which, as one might guess from the title, is populated by a heck of a lot of composers.
It makes sense to me.
Yeah. And then the other one is called the Media Council. And I'm chairing that one. I guess I'm the token composer on the Media Council. And our mission is for that is going to be, how do we address the needs of audiences and composers in this world that we're in now? The paradigm has shifted. How do we get people connected? How do we get the word out? As we were saying earlier, Marvin, in this discussion, what our colleagues are doing is fantastic. It's so worth listening to. It's so exciting. But a lot of people don't know about it. There's one thing, you know, we talk about PR, we talk about media. There are traditional ways to do that. One of my pet projects, and I'm not sure if I'll ever accomplish this, but I have this strong, strong desire to connect people who are outside of our community, who are not inside the concert halls, who have no idea that we're making music and that concerts are going on. I want to get those people finding out about it, because I think that if they knew what we did, they'd like it, or some of them would. You don't have to like everything, but hey, they'd like some of it. And I think that we have failed as a community to reach out as effectively as we maybe can now in the future to bring in non-music lovers, non-music people, you know, aficionados. We tend to be a bit self-referential, and we talk to ourselves.
Where we've had so many, and I mean, what we talked about in various other locations, all over the cities and what have you. And you know what I find really exciting about this music? You know, I mean, young people, let's talk about young people for a moment. I mean, many of them who are not music people enjoy, various types of popular music. However, many of our, quote, conservatory-trained composers have been inspired by popular music of today.
Absolutely.
You know, and I think that once our young generation starts observing this, that this is also can be their music, as well as, let's say, the other people who listen to various types of popular music. I know as a teacher, as an educator, I mean, when I have students coming for lessons, I mean, we do, of course, some of the traditional stuff, but it's the new music that the students get excited about. And because of that, many of them practice that and kind of like, oh, that those dead guy, you know, I'd rather do this. And I think the most important thing about thinking about the future is that the music of today is relevant to our young. It's within their experience.
Right, right.
And with the influences of popular music and a large variety of music, this can be their music too. But mm-hmm. the idea is to break that barrier of the traditional concert hall.
Sure.
That it's all out there.
Exactly. And I know we can do it. It's just over time. And this, again, it encompasses all kinds of music, you know, traditional music, you know, very, mm-hmm. very, you know, music from the mid-20th century, music
sure.
that's being done now. I mean, it doesn't matter what it sounds like. The point is we want people to connect with it and enjoy it and have it be part of their lives.
Yeah, and the idea is exposure, as we talked before, mm-hmm. and I think I found that most people who do have the exposure to new music of today, many of them like it.
Oh, they love it.
And they say, well, how come I never hear
exactly.
this stuff? Is the reaction I'm always hearing.
Exactly. I have an example of that. A few years ago, maybe 3 years ago, I was asked on a neighboring remote Bridges Island, up on the San Juan Islands, I was asked to do the pre-concert talk with a wonderful ensemble based out of Seattle, the Seattle Chamber Players, who had come up to Orcas Island, as it's called, to do what really was the first contemporary music concert I think that they'd ever put on during their regular winter season. And we have there's a nice little theater there, mm-hmm. seats a couple hundred people, whatever. And they, I don't think anybody in the audience had experienced contemporary living music, and everything except for one little Haydn trio, everything else on the Chamber Players program was very much music with a pulse, music from living, breathing people. Mm-hmm. And it was great. In the beginning, we're talking about it, and I'm saying, I'm just saying to the audience, listen, you don't have to like everything. You got permission to not like everything, but let it just wash over you. Enjoy this, because this was all new to them. Well, by intermission, everybody, and some of the music that was being programmed was pretty thorny stuff, even by our standards.
Really?
And it was great. By intermission, the audience members were coming up to me and to the musicians and saying, wow, we want to hear more of this. Why don't we have more contemporary music? They were so excited about this. By the end of the program, it was the same thing by the end of the concert. And it just shows you that you cannot underestimate the public. You can't assume that people are not going to like something. What kind
of
business
of
is it that we're trying to sell something that we are afraid people aren't going to like? You know, that's if you're a dentist, maybe, okay, you know people are going to go running from you. Root canal, oh my God. But music, come on, we shouldn't be afraid of that. So, and we shouldn't think that other people are necessarily going to not like what we do. That's rather self-defeating.
And that's a real, and especially as we were talking to earlier, we are in, I think, the most exciting time because anything goes.
Anything goes.
That's very exciting.
Just be entrepreneurial, be creative, be outside the box, and have fun.
Right.
Smile.
And I think that's what it's all about.
You know, I cringe anytime somebody calls what we do serious music.
Nah.
Oh, please.
Are we being serious now, Alex?
I don't think we're being serious.
Think
and boy, when you guys hear the next piece, you'll know that this is not serious
and
music.
And let's go to that. That was a very good time.
That was.
Sure
I didn't plan that lead-in.
Are you sure you don't want my job? Anyway, let's go on, Alex. Now, this is a composition titled Slipping. It was written in 2006. It's for violin, harpsichord, and very mixed percussion.
Very mixed percussion.
And I have to say, it is really cool. For no other word to describe it. Tell us about its background. I mean, originally, when I've been reading about this, this was kind of like an unexpected work as an encore or something.
This one, I don't think this was an encore. It was just the violinist who commissioned it, Robin Lawrence, who was one of the founders of an esteemed group in Los Angeles called the California Ear Unit. And Robin had commissioned this before her friend Kathy McIntosh, fabulous harpsichordist. And Robin has a great sense of humor. She's a dear friend of mine. And I asked Robin one day, I said, does Kathy have the same kind of humor you do? And Robin assured me she did. And I set about, for some reason I don't know why, but I decided to turn the harpsichord into every plectrum instrument world except for a harpsichord. Because think about it, folks. Harpsichordists play Baroque music an awful lot. Da na 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 na. It gets, you know, that's what they do. And that's the repertoire.
So I
thought it would be really cool to give Kathy something really different to play. And the thing, as you're going to hear, it starts out with a rather demented Cuban Montuno rhythm. and it goes from there. And you're going to basically, I call this a world tour for anyone with attention deficit disorder, this piece is. And it kind of slips from one thing to the next to the next.
And it works. But, I mean, it's really, I mean, after the things we've heard today, this is really something that will, like I say, it'll keep you going.
It'll keep you going for about 9.5 minutes.
And, that's it. And you're exactly right. I guess you must have composed that. We're going to listen to Slipping Now, dating from 2006. Our violinist is Robin Lorenz. She is joined by harpsichordist Kathleen McIntosh and percussionist Dan Morris. And this is from an Innova compact disc titled Notes from the Kelp. This CD is totally devoted to the works by my guest, Alex Shapiro. We listen now to her Slipping. Thank you. Music by my guest, Alex Shapiro. That was her composition, Slipping. In our performance, you heard violinist Robert Lorenz, harpsichordist Kathleen McIntosh, and percussionist Dan Morris. An Innova compact disc totally devoted to the music of Alex Shapiro.
And if there was ever any doubt that I was slightly insane, that piece might clarify it.
Well, I think music today, though, can be just fun,
yeah,
as we've talked about. It can be fun, and that definitely is. And the way we were, the way they're using the harpsichord now. It's not just Bach and
that's right.
The other Scarlatti.
It's not your grandma's harpsichord.
No, not anymore. Not anymore. Well, Alex, let's go now to something which expand a little bit, something which you said on one of your interviews online. There was an excerpt. And you have spoken about something which I actually feel very strongly about also. And that is the fact that we should not compete with each other,
right,
but rather compete with ourselves. I couldn't agree with that more, and especially in the field we are today.
Absolutely.
Expand on that.
Well, I mean, the whole nature of being an artist is to do your best work and to grow, I think, to not always be doing the same thing, but to be challenging yourself. And everything that comes out of us comes from us challenging ourselves and putting one foot in front of the other and wanting to express ourselves to other people. It is a battle with ourselves at its best and at its worst. It is not a battle with or against anybody else. I have no understanding whatsoever, really, for why people in a field, especially concert music, where we are brought into the field because we have our own fingerprint, so to speak. We're like snowflakes. Everyone's different.
That's right.
As opposed to, let's say, commercial music, which is a craft, very, very important. I've done a fair amount of it past. And that job is to maybe sound like a lot of other people because that's what the nature of that is. But in concert music, everybody who does it because they have their own voice. So there is no reason to feel competitive, in my view, with other people, because you're creating your own group of people around you, fan base, client base, ensembles, people who dig what you do, and that they're going to follow you and enjoy what you do because you sound like you. And the next person sounds like them, and that other person is going to have their group of people supporting them and finding them. And with the net now, there is opportunity. Easy opportunity for us to find people all over the world who appreciate what we do and how and what we sound like.
Yeah.
And that has really changed the picture completely, in my view, in terms of opportunities, which I find to be immense out there. There's as much patience as one has to find them. They are out there. And to meet all kinds of people and to redefine what success is in your career. Success does not necessarily mean having the top symphony orchestra or the top best-known ensemble playing and recording your music, and maybe just having some of that. Maybe success is having many, many lesser-known ensembles all over the world playing and recording your stuff. I mean, that's my version of success. You know, I'm not a big name, but I'm making a living doing this. I love doing it, and there are a handful of people out there, you know, who seem to enjoy what I spew out.
Yeah.
And I think that every composer has that opportunity, and I want to encourage all of my colleagues and everyone to find that, make their own opportunities.
Yeah, I think this is very important, especially in... Well, the whole world is so darn competitive with each other.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people will say, I write shorter pieces and he wrote a big symphony. Does that mean mine's no good? You know, or does this, and I think if people just stick to what they're brought into this world to write.
Absolutely.
It'll come out better. It'll come out them. It'll come out true.
That true is really the word, because I talk about authenticity a lot, that if we are true to ourselves and connected to something inside of us that resonates so deeply that only we could say it in the way that we're going to say it, then we're doing our job as artists.
Right.
We're doing our job.
That's right. And so I agree with this 100%. And I think, you know, one other thing, going back to new music, which I was thinking about when you were, I don't know why, when we were talking about that, but about all the different styles out there today. Many composers are writing in all those different styles too.
And some all in the same piece, like you just heard.
Right. And I mean, that made me think about that. And I think too, you know, That's what another reason why we don't have to, composers don't have to be pigeonholed, or they don't have to be focused. Oh, I just write this.
I just write this. I just write that.
I just write choral music.
And,
I,
you know, years ago, I think it used to be, especially for marketing purposes, in terms of being in what bin is is the record label going to put you in, or is the record seller? It's a marketing thing. What bin are they in? What do they sound like? Now, all of that's gone out the window. Of course, we market and retail music very, very differently. It's purchased very differently now. And I think that we can have a much broader definition of what we do. I'm an example of that. I mean, I'm a bit of a chameleon. I have a certain voice, but that voice transcends a lot of different genres.
You know, instrument, you know,
exactly.
acoustic, electronic.
Yeah.
And many composers write both today, and that's them.
And that's them, and that's the beauty of it. And there are fans for all of us out there. You just have to look under a few more rocks and make yourself findable.
So
you know, the internet is
true.
Our best tool create a web presence that is going to let people in to your life to some degree, not to the point of getting rid of your privacy, but to some degree where they can connect with you as a person and hear your music online. You know, it's a sonic business card.
Yeah.
And they discover you.
But basically, the most bottom line, I think, is believe in yourself.
Yeah.
And I think if everybody could start doing that and just compose or write whatever type of art they're in, believe in what they want to express.
And the more of their colleagues who believe in them and offer that kind of support, the more they can also believe in themselves as well. I think it's a reciprocal thing at its finest. I know this sounds also warm and fuzzy and woo-woo, but come on, folks. Let's get real. If we are kind to each other, if we are supportive of each other, it's great for all of the arts. And anything that's great, we're a community. Great for all of the arts and all artists happens to also be good for us as individual artists. And we should celebrate the successes of our peers and just rejoice in that, because what that means is people are connecting with music.
And that's what we're all here for.
That's what we're here for.
That's right. Yeah. Wonderful. I love it.
We're
going
to break into Kumbaya right now, I think.
Well, actually, we're going to break into your elegy.
Ah.
You see, that was not...
You know, there you go. We're going to break
tell
into
us a little bit about the piece, Alex,
This is a very personal piece. Yeah. It's a real contrast from Slipping, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, it is a contrast.
This is a contrast. This is, as the title might imply, it is indeed an elegy. And it was written in memory of my father, who died at a very young age, at 69, after 7 very painful years of dementia. And I spoke about him earlier in the program, I think you guys can get a sense that I really loved him very much. And he was a very brilliant man. He was quite the scholar and just a remarkable human being. And it was a very cruel fate that this befell him. And he had this just a great love of the Brahms trios, the Dvorak, the Mendelssohn. There was something in me that was a little bit channeling that, not very directly, but this is a fairly romantic piece, I think, to my ears. Mm-hmm. It certainly is very expressive, and I hope you guys enjoy it.
I'm
it's
sure
called
we will.
Elegy, and it is a very particularly beautiful performance by Trio Chromos, and I'll tell you, it's the trumpet player is Ismael Betancourt, the cellist is Carlos Rivero, and the pianist is Jose Luis Castillo. And interestingly, folks, these three gentlemen are out of the Canary Islands off the coast of Spain. And when they contacted me about recording this piece, I don't know what I expected in the Canary Islands. It turns out that there are a tremendous number of fantastic musicians over there. And they have a symphony orchestra. If all of these guys play with the symphony, but I think one or two of them do. And they're just remarkable.
There's some
it's a
good
beautiful,
composers
beautiful,
out there, too. And then we were talking before about all these remote places.
Now we get to find out about them. Because, I mean, before the web, who in the world, you know, no one would have contacted me from the Canary Islands. You know, that's pretty cool.
No.
So anyway, they do a very, very beautiful rendition of this piece.
We're going to hear that now. Okay. We hear Alex Shapiro's Elegy.
Thank you.
You were just listening to Trio Cromos perform Elegy by my guest, Alex Shapiro. I would like to let you all know the exciting news that both Classical Discoveries and the Avant-Garde Edition can now be listened to on your computer.